So I became very much a part of this community and was very involved with the people there and friends with everybody. And I had a studio there, originally given to me by the community, and eventually I had studios given to me by Christina Smith, who had moved me around from one warehouse to another, you know, depending on what she was developing. So I was quite lucky in that respect. And also another thing that was happening, you know, there was this uncomfortable marriage between the local community and these yuppies who had moved into the area. But it was a very necessary marriage to protect the traditional community. There were empty sites like the Oldham site behind my studio in Long Acre, which was just a big bomb site, a huge area. It was like 1 acre, I think, at least. And other areas like that, which were totally vacant. And then the community action in the area came together with local people and architects and artists, etc. And we designed and built these incredible gardens. I mean, they were really professionally done, with hills and streams and Japanese bridges, etc., designed by local architects. And we'd have big festivals there. I think the first camera festival was Campaign for Real Ale was held on that site. And that was my first tasting of real ale, actually. A big change from Double Diamond. back in the mid-70s, 77 or something like that. 75, 76. And so my first big mural, the Covent Garden mural, was a product of that involvement with the local community. And it shows people building a garden. They're building the garden that was underneath that painting. I don't know if you can see it in that. Can you see if I can bring that up? Yes, you can see that garden underneath the painting. And that's Cambridge Circus in the background. Oops, now what am I doing? How do we get out of this? That's Cambridge Circus in the background. And St. Martin's was just up the road from there. And that's Earlham's. The mural was in Earlham Street in Covent Garden. And depicted in the mural are, in one corner there are friends, you know, in the neighborhood who are very involved with the action. There's David Harrison, who eventually became a dean of the architecture school in Jamaica, who was one of the architects involved. Bill Lewington, who owned the Ironmongers, who was a real character. His son, when he died, his son took over the business. His name was also Bill, I think. Not Bill Lewington, so Bill, it will come to me. This is what happens when you reach this age. Bill Lewington owned the music shop across the road. Darn. Anyway, this guy in the blue shirt and with his pipe, he was a real character, lovely person. Owned the hardware shop down the road, the Ironmongers. And Ralph is the guy with his shirt off there with all the muscle. He was a Covent Garden porter at one time, I think, and etc. They were all involved with the community, or a part of the community. And so that was a product of my involvement with the community, and it's called People Build a Garden, and that was painted in 1977. And it was painted in oil paints, and it was the year of the Silver Jubilee, the Queen's Silver Jubilee. And I was living in Peabody Buildings, just behind the Coliseum at the time. They'd given that over to a short life housing to students and young professionals, etc., in the area. And again, that was those buildings were built. They did have a bathroom, but it was only one bath per floor, which was shared by the floor. At least, you know, by that stage, the working class had deserved a bath once a week, I guess, you know, as opposed to the building we had in Brixton, which had no bathrooms at all.
How did this affect the people in the area? Were they pleased? How?
Yeah, I think a lot of people saw it as a celebration of what was happening there. As I was saying, one of the ways it came about is that it was done in the Silver Jubilee year. I was living in this place in Peabody Buildings, and I got permission somehow using my Underwood typewriter, from the 1910 or something, clicking like this, with one finger, to write a letter to the Jubilee Committee, getting permission to use their insignia. So I had a letterhead with the Queen's signature, as Queen's a thing at the top, you know. And I used this to get sponsorship to go to Bollum's, who owned the paint store in Covent Garden, and they provided all the paint for the mural, etc. And I, you know, I got SGB, Scaffolding of Great Britain. I sent them this, the Queen's emblem, insignia, etc. And they provided all the scaffolding for free. I did that painting from an electric cradle. Got stuck up the wall once when the electricity went out. Took a while to get me down. And I had two assistants on that mural. The way I had approached it, it was a canvas painting, like an 8-foot high painting. I made the image on first. And then that image, I took a photograph of the painting. And I had a tower scaffold opposite the mural, opposite the wall, and I projected the image of the painting onto the wall, and then we all drew it out at night. And it was kind of very rough. And then I had blown up photographs of sections of the painting on the scaffold that we worked from. It was a strange way to work. The Brixton mural, I did the drawings and I squared up the wall. There was no projection or anything there. It was just painted from drawings. The Brixton wall, I had drawn in a sort of polyangular way. So you can, when you're on the ground, you can look at the painting from different directions, and the figures are stretched in a different way. So they appear more in proportion from the ground.
Stick with the Covent Garden one for a minute, and tell me did you render the wall? How did you prepare the wall?
Did I what?
Did you render the wall?
No. The Covent Garden one was not rendered. It was, I think, already a rendered wall, had like a lime plaster on it or something, just a standard plaster, and I just primed over it and painted it. There was no need to render it. The Brixton mural was a special render. It was done for it was a silicate mural, and I had everything prepared in with the calcined flint plaster. I had worked on that wall. Do we want to move to the Brixton one now? Or?
Well, stick with the Covent Garden, because you said that the mural itself was an image of the people building the garden that's in front of it.
Yes, that was a small garden, but there were many gardens like that in the community. There were like three or four, the biggest one being the one behind my studio off of Long Acre on the old Oldham site. I think it was called the Oldham site. It was, I can't remember what it was, a print company or something like that.
Was that the one with the pagoda in it?
It may have had a pagoda. It definitely had a bridge with a stream and hills and everything. It was landscaped and professionally done and built with the labour of the local community. Everything was voluntary. You know, I worked on it. Everybody worked on it.
So you say that you got sponsorship for materials and scaffolding. Were you able to raise any funds for your time?
I don't recall that. There must have been some money, because I must have had some money to pay the two people who worked with me on the mural. Mm. So yeah, I must have raised some money. Or that's right, I got a grant from the Arts Council, I believe, for that.
Do you recall which panel that came through?
No. It was such a long time ago. I can remember other things about Covent Garden and the people, etc. But
well, tell me a story about that. What was it like painting there?
I think you've had this yourself. It was referred to by local people as the Muriel. And I still get this in correspondence. That's kind of funny, Muriel. They were fascinated by it. I think Janet Street Porter came along and did a came up on the scaffolding or something and did an interview about the mural. I can't remember. That was a while ago. I did my first radio interview at the time. London something or other. London Radio, is it called? I can't remember. As I said, the people depicted in the mural were people in the local area, so they were, very interested to see their portraits there.
Yeah. Did you draw them or did you take photographs and work them?
Both. I photographed them working on the garden, and also and drew them individually as well.
So, how did you have a completing ceremony or? For the mural, or perhaps for the garden too, opening ceremony?
I don't recall that. There must have been, but I don't recall it somehow.
Were you just pleased it was completed?
Yeah, it was quite exhausting. I think it took like a year, as all these things do.
Yeah.
It was the organisation of it and the... The preparation of it was started in 76, and it was finished in 77.
That's quite a long time, isn't it? That's, what, 18 yeah. months?
Yes, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. What happened after this mural? Did you want to...
I got a commission from Bill Lewington to paint these murals of kids playing music. I'm trying to remember the name of the conductor. He's Simon Rattle. Oh yeah, it suddenly came to me. Simon Rattle had this kind of special orchestra or class for these young people to encourage young people in their music. So I did a series of four panels painted in oil again in a studio that Christina Smith had lent me behind the Opera House in Covent Garden. It was a sort of strange composition. The best panel, and I don't have an image of it, it must be in storage somewhere because someone just asked me for an image of this recently and I could only find two images of the panels. Was burnt off the wall, and it seemed to me to be like a racist attack, as happened to the Cable Street mural. It was of a white boy and a black boy, almost like Siamese twins playing timpani drums with these splayed tubular bells in the background. It was an interesting work. It was better than any of the other works. And I just walked past there one morning in Covent Garden, and all I could see was this charred mess. And I was like fairly heartbroken at the time. It was the first time a work of art of mine had been destroyed. And I wish I could find the image, and I can't. I still remember it clearly in my head. And then after that, I was also commissioned, again, I had another studio from Christina Smith in Covent Garden in Earlham Street. And that was for the Royal Marsden Hospital. And I did that. It was for a cancer ward in the Royal Marsden Hospital where they had radiation treatment. And it was of tropical plants from Kew Gardens. It was like a tropical forest. Not political at all in any sense or about community. It was more about creating an atmosphere that would be calming for people going for this treatment. Following that, Lambeth Council approached me and one of the workers from Lambeth Council in the arts section had come to me, and they looked around Brixton for walls. And I saw various walls, a roundabout on which someone else eventually painted a mural. And then I saw the fly tower of the Brixton, what was formerly the Brixton Odeon or Cinema, and opposite Stockwell Park Estate. And I said, "There's your wall." And they said, "Are you serious?" And I said, "Yes." I like big things. And then we went about fundraising. So we approached urban development section of Lambeth Council at the time, I think Peter Rees, who eventually became the chief planner of the City of London, and is now a professor somewhere. He's retired from that. He was the head or a part of that, and I think it was a grant of like £11,000 or something like that. They made the funds possible for this. And I'd researched silicate paint, as many other mural artists at the time were using silicate paint in London. And I had this paint from Kleinfarben in Germany. And I had the walls. Well, first of all, I was told by the plasterers, well, in order to save money, you have to key the wall. I think it was SGB provided the scaffolding again. The whole thing was scaffolded. And I got a Kango drill, and I, for like a month or so two, I raked out all the pointing vertically and horizontally on the whole, I'm not going to swear, the whole wall. It wasn't easy because it was lime plaster. I had one time in my life before I went to college, I worked on a construction site, a lot of heavy duty construction sites. Even when I was at college, to support myself through college, so I didn't have enough money. I worked as a bricklayer's labourer, a hod carrier, and mixing up the cement for this on this site in open air site in Kent. And I was like 17 or 18 at the time, 17 I guess, and running across narrow planks, across trenches with a barrow full of cement and mixing this stuff up and for this master bricklayer. So I knew about how this stuff was made, but I thought this was so old it would be soft. No, it was the hardest pointing you can imagine. And it took me like a solid month hammering this stuff. It must have driven the people on the Stockwell Park Estate crazy. I went deaf because air plugs I had melted and went into my eardrum, and I had to have my ear syringe to have my hearing restored. And then I had the wall rendered in calcined flint. There was a great view from the top of that building. I think it started like 80 foot in the air. I can't remember the height of the building. The mural actually is 30, the actual painting is 30 foot high, and it's 101 foot long or something like that, 30 meters long. I had gone around to various, it followed the Brixton riots, and there was a lot of tension in the area. And I thought I'd do a painting that celebrated racial harmony in some way, or the possibility of it. And I went around schools, because even at my school, you know, we didn't think about race, we just played with each other. Kids don't think so much about that. It's just when they get older that they begin to think about these differences. There are essentially no differences because we're all the same people. And I went around schools and there were children playing with each other regardless of their complexion. So I took photographs of them with the permission of the teachers, etc. And then I started to do these drawings in the studio and play with this kind of idea of polyangular drawing, and made this composition. And I've grown to hate it over the years. I've really grown to hate this painting. But, and then some years ago, I saw some photographs online of scaffolding, and I thought, oh great, they're going to pull this down. It's great, they're going to get rid of this mural. But no, this young woman who was a child at the time I painted it, she was now in her 30s, I guess, had created this London Preservation Society, London Mural Preservation Society. Ruth, someone over there? Ruth Miller, thank you. And they hired, do you know the artist who they hired to restore it?
No, I don't.
I know this man. He's a well-known mural
painter. Not Brian Barnes?
Wasn't Brian Barnes.
Brian Barnes? Paul Butler?
No. Maybe I'm wrong, I can't remember. One of those. But he was hired, commissioned to renovate it in silicate because he knew the silicate process. So they renovated the mural. And then another guy sent me an email through my website saying that he'd also grown up with this and he'd made this hip-hop music about the mural. Thought it was fabulous. So I began to realize that even though it's an awful painting, it really is terrible, I think. It serves a function, as all these murals do, whether, you know, you can say they're aesthetically wonderful or not, that they become a part of the community identity, or they are a celebration of the community. And they serve a function, I think. This image of racial harmony perhaps leads to racial harmony in the neighborhood, you know. It changes, it becomes part of the community identity.
Why did you hate it?
I just don't think it's a great painting. I think the Cable Street mural is a great painting. I think that's one of the best murals that was painted. It'd be nice to have done something. I don't think something like the Cable Street painting would be appropriate. This faces the Stockwell Park estate, and people look at it all the time. I don't know.
How do you feel the two murals, the Covent Garden and the Brixton one, compare or don't compare?
I think the Covent Garden mural was much more interesting as a painting, but it still has shortcomings in terms of some of the ways in which it's painted. I guess both of them have this dynamic of breaking up the space, which is interesting. But you know, what's happened to me over the years is that, you know, by the time I finished this mural in 82, I returned to the studio, and I had a studio was it Goswell Road, next to the Barbican, which I'd also helped build at one time. nearly lost my life on that construction site when I was at college. I needed to recover myself. I got far away from the reason for painting, the reason I'd become an artist in the first place. You know, I'm essentially a creature who has imagination, and that's why I started painting. Making art as a release for that, for my imagination, for that inner thing, whatever it is. But because of my background, I'd started painting. I discovered I had this facility for painting realistically. And that was what was recognized as art by the kind of communities I was a part of as a young person, as growing up, and in Covent Garden, etc. And I stuck with that, and I got further and further away from what was important to me as an artist. And what I thought was important was to have, in those days, in the 70s and early 80s, was to have work that was relevant to the community, relevant to the people, relevant, had some kind of political relevance. But that moved me further away from my own personal reasons for making art. And I had to go back to the studio in 82. After painting that mural, I took off on a tour of Japan and went all around Japan. And it took me some months, and then back to London, and I just went back to the studio after that, and I started to go through a number of different experiments in the studio. I started to paint in a way that I paint now, and then I went back to figuration, and then I started to investigate the Holocaust, which is something that always intrigued me, because there were any hints of information throughout my childhood about it. So I wanted to find out about that, and I went to the Imperial War Museum and was ushered into this kind of side annex of the Imperial War Museum, where they had all these kind of industrial rack shelves, so these metal shelves, and things like your dad's photo album, but tons of them, you know, in a line. And I went through all of these, and they were day by day photographs taken by embedded journalists when they got into the, you know, engaging the snipers outside the camps, and finally getting into the camps and liberating the camps.